serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. At a time when, even if we can't gather together in person to honor their memory, the world still is taking note of that date, June 6th, the 76th anniversary of a day where so many Americans, as well as Canadian and British forces, gave their lives for the cause of freedom in the initial assault on Normandy. Over the years, we've heard from those who participated in this massive military operation on land, on sea, and in the air. And I don't know about you, but one of the most challenging roles for me to try to wrap my brain around has always been that of the paratrooper. More than 13,000 men from the 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions descended behind enemy lines in the early morning hours of June 6, 1944, very few of them landing where they were supposed to. I had the privilege to reconnect on the phone this week with Bob Chisholm, who sounds just as sharp as he nears his 95th birthday this month as he did when I first met him 8 years ago. He's one of our last surviving triple CIBs. There were only a little more than 300 to begin with, men who earned the Combat Infantry Badge in World War II, again in the Korean War, and once again in Vietnam. Bob spent nearly 30 years in the Army, retiring as a lieutenant colonel. Before we hear about his June 6, 1944 experience with the 82nd Airborne's 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment, let's hear how it started for him and his family on December 7, 1941.
I was in Dallas, Texas. I was at home. I got the information over the radio. It came quite as a shock to myself, my family, and everyone else that I was in contact with.
So you're in high school at the time?
I was in high school, yes.
So I'm sure this was pretty big news at school the next day on Monday.
It absolutely was big news. In fact, my brothers both went down to enlist, and they didn't enlist right at that time. They did later.
Was that something crossing your mind already, too, even at that young age?
No, it wasn't. That came later after my two brothers had entered the service. Then it crossed my mind. And I actually did enlist under age. I enlisted when I was 17. I was giving my parents such a hard time about it, they were glad to get rid of me, so they let me fudge on my age. I was one of the youngest members of the 508.
When you signed up, is that what you wanted to do? Did you have this crazy thing in your mind? You know what? I think it'd be great to jump out of airplanes and with a parachute on and land behind enemy lines.
Had no idea. I took my basic training at Camp Walters, which was in Mineral Wells, Texas. During the basic training, toward the end, they sent recruiting teams out from Fort Benning, Georgia. And I think that we had two paratroopers, and they were in their jumpsuits, and they looked sharp, and they put on a demonstration. Then they called it jiu-jitsu. And they put on a demonstration, and at that point, I made up my mind, I want to be one of them. And so I volunteered for the Airborne. And at the completion of basic training, they sent me to Fort Benning, Georgia. And I completed the jump school in December of 42.
December of 42. You weren't very old in December of 42, were you?
No, I wasn't.
17 years old.
Still. The regiment moved to Camp McCall, and we'd gone through extensive training. And we had some of the finest officers and NCOs that the Army ever produced. In particular, one that will always be in my mind is Lieutenant Colonel Louis G. Mendez. He was our battalion commander, and I think that because of the training that we'd received from him and emphasis on task in front of us and getting in preparation for it, that I'm here today. And the time that we were ready to go into Normandy, I think without exception, that most of the troopers in the regiment were ready to go because that's what we've been training for. We look forward to it. I don't recall ever having any anxiety at all about it.
Too young and dumb to know any better at 18 years old?
Too young and dumb, yep. And well trained. Well, this is what we're trained for. Such an extensive program that physically and mentally you were ready. You thought that you were the best. And as far as we were concerned, we were the best. We were the elite. This is what we've been training to do. Let's go and do it.
Every time June 6th rolls around, you reflect back on it. So I'm guessing your memory of that day is still pretty sharp. How early did that day start for you?
Well, it actually started on June the 5th. I think around 10:30 in the evening, we boarded the planes. We'd had one delay, of course, one day delay, and we boarded the planes. We took off from our airfield, circled, and joined with the rest of the flights. We were out of the plane at about 1:37.
Pitch black.
No, there was actually just clouds. There was moon out and there's clouds.
Moon and clouds, and you could probably see some other aircraft around?
Well, yes, all the aircraft in our flight. As we approached, as we passed over the Guernsey Islands, we caught some flak there. And then as we passed over the Normandy coast, we began to get flak, and we ran into the clouds. And the planes, not the ones in my particular V, but the other planes began to disperse. And consequently, when we jumped, our Pathfinders had not been able to set up their equipment, so we then jumped on the green light of the pilot where he thought we should be. I didn't land on our designated DZ or landing zone. In fact, when I landed, I didn't know where I was at. I didn't recognize the terrain around me at all, and the hedgerows, and I had a little problem getting out of my chute, and I had to take my knife that I had strapped to my leg and cut myself out of my chute. Walked out to the road. This is a thing that you're not taught not to do, is stay on the road. Anyway, I walked down the road, and the first I heard was a motorcycle coming down. I knew we didn't have any motorcycles, and so it was a German motorcycle, a sidecar, and opened fire on them, knocked them out, and kept walking, came up on a glider, looked in the glider, and everybody in the glider was dead. Walked a little while further into St. Mary Gleese, and I saw John Steele hanging from the tower. In St. Mary Gleese. So that was the 3rd Battalion of the 05 had the objective of taking St. Mary Gleese. They were there, and so I stayed with G Company of the 05 for the first 4 days until we got together more of the 508.
And folks who've seen the movie The Longest Day know John Steele. When you say you saw John Steele hanging there, he's the paratrooper whose parachute caught on the back steeple of the church. He was hanging there for 2 hours pretending to be dead. He was eventually captured by the Germans but then escaped and rejoined his division. As you described that, as you come down, you have problems with your chute, you have to cut yourself out. Now, I'm hearing that you were all by yourself at this point?
I was all by myself, yep.
And you're 18 years old?
I'm 18 years old.
Behind enemy lines on D-Day, June 6, 1944. Did it hit you how difficult the situation you were in, or were you just running on adrenaline? I mean, what was that like to be an 18-year-old in those kind of circumstances?
The only thought that I had at that time was to get together with the other members of my unit and get the mission accomplished that we were given. I don't think that the severity of the situation really struck me until we were on in the trenches dug by the Germans outside of St. Mary Gleese and had an 81 mortar position sitting there. And the 81 mortar position fired off a couple of rounds. These were the 505. And they drew fire from an 88 and killed everyone in that mortar position. And that's when it struck me that, well, you can get hurt doing this. And that was the first time. It dawned on me how serious the situation was.
I want to ask you, just to go back a little bit, before you jumped out of that airplane in the dark of night on this historic day, did you take a moment to pray, to reflect, to think? Do you remember anything that might have flashed through your mind before you made that jump out of that airplane on a day that would change your life and really change the history of the world?
I don't recall that I prayed prior to the jump. I might have in the plane. I was raised in a religious family, and I probably did. I don't recall specifically that I did. I was the number 2 man in the stick behind my platoon leader. I was his radio operator. So he was standing in the door watching our flight as we passed over the coast, and he could see some of the flak that the planes were getting. Really, the only thought was, let's get out of the plane, get it over with, get on the ground, and get going on our mission.
And I'm just imagining that every hour brought another situation you'd never faced before in your life, and you have to be pretty adaptable in those circumstances. Pick it up where you left off, and because you're still behind enemy lines, you met up with some of your fellow Americans that are fighting the Germans there. What did you encounter next?
The 3rd Battalion of the 05 was holding a pretty strategic position there in St. Mary Gleese because this was a key road junction, and the only way the Germans could get reinforcements down toward the beach was to pass through St. Mary Gleese. So the Germans attacked St. Mary Gleese on several occasions, and we were involved in fighting off the attack, defending against them, which we did. So it was several days that I was with them, with the 505. We had been subjected to attacks by the German and defending position. Then I began to meet up with more of the troopers from the 508, and left the 05 and rejoined our unit.
All right, so there was still a long way to go for what you would encounter. This is the first day of the invasion that you described for us, and moving forward, you meet up with some of the guys that you knew before. And I'm sure that the stories started to come your way about guys who hadn't been as fortunate as you. Did it start to weigh on you, the losses that you knew had been suffered in that first jump on June 6th?
No, at that particular time, I wasn't aware of any losses. I had not had any conversation with anyone that said, we lost so-and-so or lost so-and-so. The actual knowledge of the losses would come on a day-to-day basis later when we actually got involved in attacking our objectives. And then you would actually see some of those that you had been friends with through the training years become casualties. That began to impact on you. And then you begin to realize how serious this whole thing was, that this was really a pretty dangerous operation, and people were getting killed, and it could happen to you.
And how constant was it for you? Did you ever find time to get a little break, or were you always on edge? Did you never have a chance to relax a little bit in that situation?
I don't recall ever having relaxed a minute from the time that we jumped into Normandy until the time that I was wounded and evacuated through medical channels. Yeah, and you stayed on the edge all the time. The adrenaline was flowing, and this was very helpful to you, too, because it kept you more, you became more alert and realized that this was a situation that could result in your death, and so you better stay sharp. You better remember everything that you'd been taught during your training. So that was a constant reminder of just how serious the situation was.
Well, you kind of answered my next question, which was, how did you keep from cracking up in a situation like that, staying focused and being able to do your job? You talk about that adrenaline and staying alert. Do you think, was there one thing, one concept, one idea that maybe had been shared with you in training, or just one aspect of your personality and the way you were equipped that you think helped you get through it?
Well, I think that the training that we had taken and been exposed to was the major factor in your mental attitude in combat. We had received the best training, I think, that any individual could probably possibly get. The mere fact that we were paratroopers and that we were expected to be able to do more than your average soldier. This had been really emphasized during all our training. You're airborne, you're paratroopers, you're the elite, you're the best, and that's the way we expect you to be. And that's the way we were. I think initially and then on during the entire campaign with the airborne. Now, don't misunderstand me. After that initial contact, especially seeing that the mortar crew being killed, it stayed in your mind just how serious the situation was, and then you begin to feel that fear. And that's not something that I had it to begin with. There just wasn't anything that bothered me to that point. But with each day of combat, you become a little more fearful. And the only thing that kept me going, and I'm sure that you'll hear this again, that kept the others going, I would rather have anything happen to me than to let my buddies down. That was a driving force. That pretty much predominated throughout a lot of individuals.
Just knowing that someone else was depending on you, so it's one thing to let yourself down, but if you let them down, then you're doing everybody a disservice?
That's exactly right. I would have preferred to have been killed than to have let my buddies down.
When that day gets here every year, and when you think back, you experienced it from one person's point of view, but with the lens of history, you've seen the big picture, and you know how significant that day was. What's the significance to you? What are you most proud of in terms of being a part of June 6, 1944?
The thing I'm most proud of is I have survived. Mm-hmm. Not really. To have been a part of that operation, to have been a part of history, I think has really left an impact on myself and probably most veterans that participated in D-Day.
So you mentioned, I know we're skipping past probably a lot of things to get there. Where were you wounded? What was the circumstances around that? What happened?
I was on a patrol. We were preparing to attack out of the position we were in. And I was on a combat patrol. We were to make contact with the enemy to find out what where their positions were. And I was the point man on the patrol with my good friend Bill Hughes. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. It was daylight. We walked into a German position that had a armored car and a machine gun, and I took a machine gun wound in my right shoulder and my forehead. I remember that distinctly because it was my 19th birthday, June the 23rd.
June the 23rd of 1944. Happy birthday. And you say your forehead. Now, I've talked to a lot of guys with a lot of close calls, but to me, if you were wounded in the forehead, that's a pretty stinking close call.
Actually, back of my head here. The bullets just broke a little bit of my skull and the skin and then all my right shoulder. I was taken out.
Did you lose consciousness or were you?
No, I didn't. My friend Bill Hughes kept saying, Bob, are you all right? And every time he said, Bob, are you all right? They'd open up that machine gun again. And I was just in enough of a defilade that it was just clipping the top of my head still. I was thinking, I wish you'd shut up.
Shut up or we're going to get killed, huh?
And he says, I'm going to open fire on them and let's get the hell out of here. And I had a BAR. I don't know how I ended up with a BAR, for God's sakes. But I had a BAR, and when he opened fire, I jumped up and opened fire, and we both took off, and we ran into our patrol on the way back. I was able to move pretty good still.
You had to be in a pretty good amount of pain, though, I would think.
I guess I was. I don't recall it so much.
So I guess it probably didn't keep you out of commission for too long then, huh?
No, I went back to the England hospital. I was gone for a couple of months. I got back just in time for the Operation Market Garden. I was scared before, but from that point on, I stayed scared for the rest of the time. The thing that kept me going was the fact that this was my my duty. And again, I would like to emphasize this, never let your buddy down.
He didn't then, and he hasn't since. Bob Chisholm, wounded at Normandy, would be wounded again in Holland in Operation Market Garden 3 months later. Then again 3 months after that during the Battle of the Bulge. He was in the hospital back in El Paso when Germany finally surrendered. But then, as I told you, he returned for intense combat in the Korean War and the Vietnam War. If you ever find yourself in El Paso, Texas, go to the corner of Alabama and Harrison Boulevard, and you'll find Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bob Chisholm Park. That's all the time we have today on this edition of Hometown Heroes. The three men that you heard from risked their lives, endured unimaginable things, and witnessed many of their friends give their lives. Certainly, we owe them a debt of gratitude for what they did in the past, but maybe the perspective the last hour has given us can help us in the future. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.